The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, the Peabody Award-winning program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today we present the last in a series of four conversations with distinguished leaders of modern thought. Our guest is Sergeant Shriver, the director of the Peace Corps. He will be interviewed by NBC News White House correspondent Ray Shearer.
The Peace Corps is now a thriving, solidly supported organization a mere 2.5 years after its inception. To understand its success, a brief look at the background of its director, Sergeant Shriver, is in order. Mr. Shriver has been a successful businessman. He's held important executive posts with Chicago's Merchandise Mart and Newsweek magazine. He's been active in educational circles as president of the Chicago Board of Education. His long-standing concern with social and moral problems has been reflected in his work as president of the Interracial Council of Chicago and his leadership in medical research as executive director of the Kennedy Foundation. In addition to the dynamism of Sergeant Shriver, another reason for the record of the Peace Corps may be found in the very nature of the project itself, and it's that aspect I'd like to examine with you now, Mr. Shriver. It is said in the Talmud, whoever teaches another man's child and helps him grow to the fullness of his promise, it is as though he gave him birth. Is there any relationship, Mr. Shriver, between that statement and the nature of the Peace Corps?
Yes, I think there is, Mr. Shearer. In the first place, almost half of the people in the Peace Corps are actually classroom teachers. They are finding in this work abroad the same kind of satisfaction that teachers get working in the classrooms here in America. One of our people, for example, wrote a letter not long ago and said, it's magnificent to see the light up in a child's eye when you're teaching them in a classroom. Well, to me, these people who are actually teaching exemplify that statement from the Talmud. These Peace Corps volunteers are fulfilling that statement, I believe. But in a broader sense, there are many other aspects to the Peace Corps which carry out that idea. For example, I've noticed in our own administrative organization here in Washington that many of the people who have worked in other agencies of the government or outside the government have for the first time in their life felt a complete commitment to an idea. They work until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night at the Peace Corps headquarters, not because anybody forces them to, not because they're getting paid overtime, but because they believe in the conception of the idea of the Peace Corps. I think that they have been released in doing this work so that they are, in a sense, having a new birth. The people right here in our own country.
There is a spiritual parallel, a Peace Corps based on the idea of one man helping his brother in a shared experience.
There's no question about that. And I think that the headquarters people in Washington feel that their complete justification is the amount of help that they can give to the Peace Corps volunteers overseas. In other words, they sort of take the attitude that a good manager of a team takes. He doesn't actually play in the game. He's not in the football game or the baseball game. But he gets his success out of the success of the athletes whom he's helped to manage. Well, that's the way that people feel at the headquarters in Washington.
Why is it that the volunteers have a greater feeling of commitment in this than in anything they've previously done? What is the intangible that seems to envelop them?
Well, there are a lot of aspects to it, and it varies, I think, from volunteer to volunteer. But one of the basic things is that many of them feel that they have an opportunity here to be of service to their fellow man. That's number one. Another thing is that they feel that they're making a contribution to a world order, to stability in the world. I think many Americans are concerned that the emphasis it's given to armaments, not only here in our own country, but all around the world. And they feel that there has to be some alternative to warfare, and that the Peace Corps is one alternative. This is not to say it's the only alternative or necessarily the best, but a growing number of young Americans, I believe, want to make this kind of a contribution toward world peace.
Well, the Peace Corps seems to me, great success in the field of cultural relations and the successful integration of all races and religion, both within the Corps itself and in the various countries to which it sends volunteers. How do you explain that record, Mr. Shriver?
Well, we've made a conscious effort to exemplify within the Peace Corps the basic tenets of American society, that all men are created equal, that people should be accepted for Peace Corps service on a basis of non-discrimination, whether on the race, color, or creed. The result of that is that Today we have Catholics teaching in schools in Protestant countries and Protestants teaching in schools in Catholic countries. We have Jewish volunteers at work in countries associated with the Arab League. And all of these people are accepted on the basis of equality. I think that this exemplifies our American society, and our Peace Corps organization has aggressively attempted to make this known to people in America so that we would get applicants of all races, colors, and creeds in as volunteers and also as staff members.
When a young man or young woman does volunteer, are any questions asked about the applicant's religion?
No, they're not. They're not asked about his religion. They're not asked about his racial background. So that we evaluate the people solely on the basis of their qualifications for the job.
Well, how about the countries which seek help from the Peace Corps? Can they specify anything about the religion of a volunteer?
No, they cannot. All of our volunteers are assigned overseas on a non-discriminatory basis. And when we announced that policy, there were some people who said that because of it, we would never be invited to certain countries. But the truth of the matter is that we have been invited to all types of countries, all where different religions are practiced and where different racial groups live. In fact, we have been invited to almost 25 countries that we have not yet been able to go to. In other words, we have a backlog of requests for the Peace Corps that we have not been able to fill.
How was the idea of the Peace Corps born? Could you go back to the beginning?
Well, going back to the beginning in that case is a long way, I'm afraid. I really believe that the Peace Corps comes right out of the ancient Judeo-Christian heritage of our culture. I know that in the Bible, of course, there are references to the being your brother's keeper, the Talmudic concept that whoever saves a single life saves a whole world. Then there was the philosopher William James, who talked about the idea of a army mobilized as a moral equivalent of war. And then most recently, of course, Senator Hubert Humphrey introduced a bill, I think it was 1958 or 59, in the United States Senate calling for the creation of a Peace Corps. And Henry Royce introduced a bill in the Congress calling for the creation of a .4 youth corps. So I think there have been many people who have had the idea of a Peace Corps before. But it was only in 1961 when President Kennedy spoke up on behalf of the Peace Corps that both the idea and the power to implement it were combined at one time. And that's why we have a Peace Corps today and did not have one in the past.
Isn't it the great missionary spirit of America, which is really your precursor?
Well, there's no question about that. The missionaries, of course, have set an enviable record all over the world. I wouldn't say it was only the missionary spirit of America, however. I think the idea of the Peace Corps is broader than any national group like the Americans. I think that this is exemplified by the fact that other people, other nations, are starting Peace Corps operations now. And as I said a minute ago, the Peace Corps is a reflection, in my judgment, of the entire philosophical background of Judeo-Christian culture.
How did you get the job of running the organization?
Well, that's a question that, you know, Mr. Scherer, has been asked me many times, and a lot of people don't believe it, but the true story is that when the president asked me to take it on, I said that I realized he had lots of political debts to pay off. He was a newly elected president, and I suggested to him that he offer this position to one of the people that he had a political debt, and he told me that I didn't understand, that most people thought the Peace Corps was going to be a big fiasco, and it was better than for a relative to have the job. It'd be easier to fire a relative than a political friend.
Well, he hasn't had to fire you, that's for sure. What is the size of the Peace Corps now? How many volunteers in action, and how many countries?
Well, right now we have about 5,000 volunteers in the Peace Corps, either in training here or overseas. They're working in 45 different nations around the world. By Christmas time of this year, we expect that we'll have about 9,000 volunteers in the Peace Corps.
You'll double it between now and Christmas?
Yes, yes, that's true, almost double it. And the reason for that is that most of our new trainees, new volunteers, come into the Peace Corps during the summer months. That enables us to use many different universities in our own country to train them, and it also coincides with the opening of school years and new programs abroad, so that our volunteers are able to arrive in foreign countries at the time they're needed.
Sergeant Shriver, is there any top figure in your mind that the Peace Corps will grow to? What do you look for at the end of 1964?
Well, we have proposed to Congress that by the end of 1964, there should be 13,000 people in the Peace Corps, and that the difference between the 9,000 and the 13,000 should be concentrated in Latin America. We think there's a great opportunity in Latin America. There's a great demand in Latin America for Peace Corps volunteers. It turns out that Spanish is the second most popular language in our country, and therefore it makes sense to send those people who speak Spanish to Latin America. So we look for a Peace Corps of approximately 13,000 people by 64. How large the Peace Corps might become in the future is really a question that can only be answered in terms of two or three very important points. Number one is, how many qualified Americans are going to volunteer for Peace Corps service? Second, what's the demand going to be from overseas? And third, how much money is there available for this type of work?
About the volunteers, are you looking mostly for people with specific skills, or do you just want people who will go out and do a job?
Well, really, we want both. We want people with skills, and we want the liberal arts graduates from colleges, the people who have specialized in sociology and the liberal arts, just as much as people who have specialized in engineering, math, and science. Most of all, however, rather than a special skill, is we're looking for people of character, people with maturity, people who are able to carry on successfully over a period of 2 years abroad.
What kind of man makes the ideal Peace Corps volunteer? Where has he grown up in the United States? What sort of education has he had? What has been his family background? Is there such a thing as an ideal volunteer?
Well, actually, I don't think we have a Peace Corps type. And in fact, I hope we never do have a Peace Corps type. We've got people 18 years old. We've got people 76 years old. We've got people who graduated from high school, never went to college, who are skilled craftsmen, some of them. We have people who are PhDs and who've taught in universities. So that there really isn't a type. I will say, though, that all of them, I believe, have one thing in common, and that is that they are anxious to serve. They're anxious to help their fellow man, and they've got the courage, they've got the perseverance to carry on the job abroad.
What percentage of the total Corps is in Africa? What percentage in Asia, Europe, South America? How does it break down, roughly?
Well, by this fall, about 40% of our people will be in Latin America. About 30% will be in Africa, and the remaining 30%, 15%, will be in the Middle East and 15% in the Far East.
As I understand it, the Peace Corps is based somewhat on the aspect of these countries trying to help themselves. Could you give us some examples of how these countries are responding to Peace Corps efforts to help them help themselves?
Yes, well, all of the things we do are an effort to make these countries independent of Peace Corps assistance in the future. For example, Nigeria made a study which showed that they needed, let's say, 600 teachers this year, 800 teachers next year, 1,000 teachers the next year, but then it would begin to decrease as they got more of their own teachers, so that by 1970, let's say, there wouldn't be any need for foreign teachers in Nigeria. Well, now, we fill that gap until they can take care of themselves, and we are participating in the process of producing teachers for that country. Now, this is true in practically every country where we work, especially in the teaching professions. It's also true when we do work such as civil engineering or geology. Once we've done a geological survey for a country, we're finished, we get out, and then they carry it on from there.
I was talking to some of your people about the Philippines, where there's a Camp Brotherhood, where volunteers apparently inspired natives to build a camp for underprivileged children.
That's true. Out there, there had never been a free camp for underprivileged children in the Philippines, as I understand it. About 19 of our volunteers out there got one organized. They got Philippine doctors to give their time free. They got Philippine businessmen to take an interest in it. And very soon, the Filipinos had taken it over themselves. We think that this was a good step in the right direction, and the Filipinos themselves, I think, have been gratified to see what they could do on their own. The Filipino people, incidentally, are extremely receptive to the Peace Corps. We've had a wonderful welcome out there, and I think that our program there is growing to the mutual satisfaction of both the Filipinos and the Americans.
Is that not your largest program?
It is our largest program, and it will be our largest program for a number of years perhaps to come. We have already 600 people in the Philippines. By the fall, we'll have almost 700. And it's producing a very favorable response for our country. At the beginning, people sometimes said to me, why go to the Philippines? They're so favorable to the United States already. My thought was that what you do is best is to strengthen your ties with your friends. I think that it's important when you have good friends to help them and help them to become stronger so that they can exemplify to the best of their ability the ideals of democracy, the ideas of the culture that we all believe in. And I think that the Philippines have done an admirable job in this respect.
Mr. Schreiber, it's been remarked that one of the great assets of the Peace Corps is the fact that it doesn't give anything away. How do you explain this almost seeming paradox?
Well, I think we do give away something. That is, we give away, the volunteers themselves give away their labor. They give themselves. And when a person gives themselves, they are giving the most priceless thing in the world. That's a lot more valuable, I think. It's a lot better understood than mere money or material resources. So when the American volunteers are abroad giving themselves, they are giving a very priceless quality. They're giving a very priceless award, you might say, a reward to the foreign countries. And, of course, they are learning at the same time. They go over with a spirit of humility. They go over to learn. They don't go over with a big idea, a superiority idea, that they're over there to teach people who themselves are ignorant. That's not true. All of our volunteers realize that in the Philippines or in Indonesia or in Africa, that we, the volunteers and the Peace Corps, are learning a great deal about ancient and admirable cultures. So this is a two-way street, and I think they go with that attitude, and that's what makes the Peace Corps popular.
Are you not working with a great many private organizations?
Yes, we are. We have 25 contracts with 25 different American private organizations, such as the YMCA, CARE, the American 4-H Foundation, the National Grange, the Farmers Union, and other groups of that type, under systems whereby they and we together jointly carry on programs in various countries. In this way, we feel that we're exhibiting overseas the essential pluralistic aspect of American society. After all, we're not just a monolithic society where everything is done by the government. And I think it would be a mistake for us in the Peace Corps to give the impression abroad that we are such a society. By using these private groups cooperatively with the government, we do demonstrate, as I said a minute ago, the pluralistic aspect of American culture.
Well, of course, many elements obviously contribute to the success of the Peace Corps. How important to the program's well-being is the fact that the volunteers live among and with the people of the country they serve?
I think that's essential. I think it's and we've got some proof of it. For example, in South America, we sent people there to work in the slums. And at the beginning, these people lived in modest housing, not fancy housing, but it was a little bit better than the slum housing. And in the morning, they would go into the slum, and at nighttime, they would come out of the slum. And that approach was ineffective. So our volunteers move themselves right into the slums so that they live in the slums morning, noon, and night. They work in the slums. They eat in the slums. They sleep in the slums. And from that point on, the program really blossomed. And this, to me, is proof of the fact that unless you show by what you eat, by what you wear, by where you live, the language you speak, and so on, unless you show a real commitment to the people with whom you're trying to work, that the results of your work are ineffective.
You take, again, speaking of an average American who's grown up in fairly comfortable circumstances, and you suddenly put him out in a slum in Malaysia or however. How does he do this? How does he adjust to it?
Well, first of all, we don't really put him out without any preparation. Everybody in the Peace Corps gets at least 3 months training in our own country before they go overseas. Then they get an orientation program in the host country. And, of course, they get plenty of lectures and plenty of talk about what it really is going to be like when they get there. Now, having said this, it is true that there still is a shock, you might say, when you come up against the reality. In these circumstances, we think that the only thing that carries the volunteers through is their own internal resources, their own maturity, their own courage, their own perseverance. And, of course, that's what we look for when we try to select people for service abroad.
How many have not been able to cut it?
Well, out of the first 4,000, there have been about 50 who have been separated from the Peace Corps for emotional disturbances or because they were not able to cut it, as you phrase it. Mm-hmm. There have been about another 100 that we have separated from the Peace Corps for medical reasons or for compassionate reasons. But out of the first 4,000, there's about 50, which I think is about half of 1%, somewhere in there.
What color negligible?
It's really very small.
Action is, of course, one effective way of demonstrating ideas to people, but what about the problem of language training for the volunteers? Has it proven sufficient to enable them to communicate with their hosts in the very...
Well, not in all cases, no. And the interesting thing is that, to me at any rate, was interesting, was that we thought that French and Spanish would be the easiest languages.
Aren't they?
They're the hardest. And why? Well,
why, yes.
When you send American volunteers, let's say, to Thailand, and they can speak some Thai, it's very complimentary to the Thais, and they're surprised that Americans can speak any Thai. But if you send Americans down to South America and they speak some Spanish, that's not good enough, because those people there know that Americans should be able to speak Spanish. Or if you send them to a French-speaking country in Africa, they expect the volunteers to get off speaking French like Charles de Gaulle or somebody, which obviously they can't do.
I see. So the well-known languages require a rather sophisticated...
That's correct.
What do the volunteers get, 160 hours of specific language training before leaving the country?
That's what they used to get. We started off giving them about 160 hours. Now we're giving them 260 hours. And in some of the more difficult languages, like Thai, which is a tonal language, we give 350 hours before they go to Thailand.
I'm wondering about the older people. You mentioned a man 72. In our society, where more and more people are attaining the biblical riches of 70, what place is there for older people in the Peace Corps?
Well, there are many places, and I'm happy to say that today we have more grandparents in the Peace Corps than we have teenagers. So we are making a definite effort not only to attract older people, but to place them. Now, it is true that it's a little more difficult to place them. And also, they seem to have a little bit more difficulty with the physical examinations, which are required because we want to be sure that people stay healthy overseas. But we are looking for older people who can work in any one of the major fields that we're interested in. For example, in education, in agriculture, in any of the medical skills, such as doctors, nurses, lab technicians, any of those areas, and older people who are qualified in the skilled trades, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, construction people, automobile mechanics, diesel mechanics. All those types of skills are greatly needed in the Corps, and older people possess them, in many cases, more than younger people do.
Well, now, this summer, the first of the volunteers that you sent out 2 years ago will be returning. They'll come back with both marvelous knowledge of the country where they have been and a great sympathy for the people that they've been with for 2 years. How are we going to make use of that in our national life?
Well, already, American universities have established about 150 scholarships specifically earmarked for returning Peace Corps volunteers. Therefore, I think these universities are taking the lead in bringing the volunteers into American education. Certain public school systems, right here in Washington, D.C., for example, and in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, special efforts are being made by the superintendents of schools to bring Peace Corps volunteers back into the public school systems. Also, the United States government, through its agency, USIA, United States Information Agency, the State Department, and other agencies, United States Public Health Service, are trying to interest the Peace Corps volunteers in going to work for the national government. I've been very much encouraged to see through a little survey we made that over 75% of the returning Peace Corps volunteers are interested in joining service organizations, whether it's government service, private voluntary agencies, or other groups of that type.
Well, it seems to me they have something almost unique to contribute. Our diplomats go out and one hears a criticism that they see only other diplomats. Yet these people have been living with the people on their level. How can we make use of this in our national life, particularly in our diplomatic corps?
Well, I think that it would be very helpful if a number of these Peace Corps volunteers could get appointments to the Foreign Service, because if nothing else, they've proved that they can live in a different culture successfully, and that's very important. I think also that their skills in some of these more unusual languages like Urdu or Bengali or Nepali, languages like that, even Swahili, would be a help to our State Department. I think that's the most immediate way. I want to keep coming back and insisting on education. I think that when these people come back to America, if they can get into the classrooms and teach our people about Africa or Latin America, if they can teach Spanish up here and Spanish culture as exemplified in Latin America, it seems to me that this would be very helpful to the students in our country.
I'd like to ask you to be personal, if I may, for a moment. I've seen you leave Washington, get on a plane, and go to these faraway places, and you get out in the field, you ride in a jeep, and you talk to these people, the volunteers. What do they tell you? What has this meant to them in personal terms? How has it affected them?
The most satisfying thing to me is that I have yet to run across a Peace Corps volunteer who did not think that the Peace Corps, for him, had been a great success. I remember, being in the service during the war, and so many people grouse or complain about having to be in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I have not yet run across a case where a Peace Corps volunteer contested or didn't agree that the Peace Corps for him was a great thing.
Why is this different than being in the Army or the Navy, as you put it?
Well, I think
because
it's
of the people you chose in the first place?
No, I think it's the freedom they get once they're in the Peace Corps. First place, they're on their own. They don't have somebody bossing them around every day. They don't have to muster at 8 o'clock, and at 6 o'clock, they don't have to sleep in a compound, all that kind of thing. They are on their own. They are their own bosses. They're able to do what they want. Second, they realize that they're under observation all the time by foreign people, and that they, to a certain extent, exemplify what America stands for. So they're conscious of carrying that burden and that responsibility.
What does this do to a young man's spirit, a young man, 21, 22, helping people and seeing these people grow and prosper? What does it do to his spiritual quality?
Well, the best way I can describe it is to say that three professors at the University of California who taught Peace Corps volunteers before they went overseas visited them about a year after they were overseas, and they could hardly recognize them because the volunteers had grown up so much. They were so much more mature, so much more certain of themselves, so much more sure of what they wanted to do with their lives. So I think it has a tremendously deep effect spiritually and in maturing the volunteers for the work in the future.
What has been the international response to the Peace Corps? Are other countries emulating us?
Well, they say imitation is the most sincere form of flattery, so I'm delighted that there are already about 10 nations that have decided to start their own Peace Corps operations. That's West Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, Norway, New Zealand, and others of the industrialized countries. And then several of the underdeveloped, economically underdeveloped nations are also starting their own Peace Corps operations. El Salvador and Honduras in Central America. Ethiopia is considering doing the same out in Africa. And another interesting twist is that two countries are considering or sending Peace Corps volunteers to the United States. That is, they would send...
In reverse.
That's right. They'd send people from their countries up here.
Finally, now, from an American viewpoint, what is the principal value, as you see it, of the Peace Corps?
Well, I think that the Peace Corps may have its ultimate, most important values here in the United States. In the first place, all of the people who serve in the Peace Corps will be profoundly affected by this experience. They will come back here knowing another culture, another language. They will have traveled. They will know the world as few Americans have ever had a chance to know it. They will never be the same. They will never be the narrow provincial person who thinks merely of Anglo-Saxon, let's say, Anglo-Saxon culture. I think that they themselves, therefore, will be greatly different and much better citizens. And they're the people they come in contact with, whether it's giving speeches or teaching in classrooms or just as citizens in a community. They will be a very important influence in our country.
And we are all the bigger for it. From all you've told us about what the Peace Corps is doing for others and in a very real sense for America, its essence may very well be found in the words of the Jewish medieval philosopher Maimonides: the highest form of aid we can give a needy person is to enable him to become self-sufficient. Thank you, Sergeant Shriver, for being with us today, and continued success to the Peace Corps.
If you would like a copy of today's program, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Light program today was the last in a series of four conversations with distinguished leaders of modern thought. Our guest was Sergeant Shriver, Director of the Peace Corps. He was interviewed by NBC News White House correspondent Ray Shearer. Editorial consultant for this program was Robert Allison. I invite you to join us next week when the Eternal Light begins its summer series, The Words We Live By. This year featuring outstanding literary dialogues of past seasons between Mark Van Doren and Maurice Samuel. This program will be the first in a series entitled The Wisdom Books of the Bible. This is Vic Robey. This weekly Peabody Award-winning program is produced under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This pre-recorded program has been an NBC Public Affairs presentation.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.